All right, hey guys, welcome to the podcast. Neil, how's it going this week?
It was a long day today, start of quarter two. I think I've mostly got my ducks in a row, so now that things are moving, I think it'll get better.
Well, quack, quack, quack for you, my friend. I'm glad they're all on a row for you. Has your any update on the PC situation? You got your PC fixed yet?
I'm still doing some like price and like quality comparisons on a new graphics card, but I think that's just the long and the short is I need to get a new one.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Okay, never hurts to try a new GPU. Gideon, how about you, man?
Doing good. Watching some stuff for spooky season, obviously Suspiria. Also watched Godzilla versus Biollante. That was really fun. And Billy and Mandy made for TV movie.
Oh, okay. Cool. Is it new?
No, it's from 2007. It was called Big Boogie Adventure. I'd somehow never seen it. Alyssa showed it to me, and it was awesome. It was really good. And then we just kind of binged some Billy and Mandy.
I got talked out of a guitar one time at a guitar store because the clerk told me that it looked too much like the it looked like Mandy from Billy and Mandy because I had like
the hair
on it. Yeah. So she talked funny. Me out of that one. I always remember that was funny. That's cool. Well, Neil, I know you've been playing Ghost of Tsushima. I marathoned it this weekend, and I finished Ghost of Tsushima in like 3 days or something like that.
Yeah, I saw you putting in the hours.
Damn.
I would say that I still feel that it has problems. It's a game that gets worse the more you think about it. But if you're just like down to slash some Mongols up and throw some ninja stars and get some stealth kills out of the tall grass, you know, it's a pretty fun time. There's a lot to like about it, but I think like the more you play it, the more problems start to kind of rear their heads. And especially if you've been playing it like a lot in one weekend, you start to realize like how thin of a game it really is. There's really not much to it. I mean, it's like the only thing you ever do is like follow NPCs to objectives, and then the objective is like clear this camp of Mongols, and then like, all the side objectives are also clearing camps of Mongols. So,
question: Did you do the DLC?
No, I decided that I will wait to do the DLC if I get really hyped between now and when Ghost of Yote comes out. If there's like new trailers or whatever, and I can't wait to play more, I'll save the DLC for then.
So, this is a flawed take on my end because I haven't finished the main campaign.
Okay.
But like a cool aspect. So for first off, I think that the DLC is like so much stronger narratively than the rest of the game. Like it's a lot of like personal character stuff, which the game desperately needed. But one cool thing that they did is that you can basically do it after the main campaign or during the main campaign, and they have like slightly altered cutscenes, depending and like dialogue, based on where you decided to start the DLC from.
Okay.
The problem for me is that one of the major upgrades you can get on the island is horse armor sets and horse abilities. And spoiler for those of you who haven't played Ghost of Tsushima, your horse fucking dies in Act 3. And so I was like, man, I got all these cool abilities in this horse armor. Now I've got this like non-named, nondescript horse first of the game.
Damn.
Which then also made me question like, how does this work if you play it after the main campaign?
Well, not to like spoil things too much, Neil. I wouldn't really say this is much of a spoiler. If you progress all the way through the main campaign, you eventually get a replacement horse that is like a named it's like one of the horses you didn't choose, basically. It's not like a new special horse, but it's like, you know, it's a non-basic horse, so you will eventually get those powers back.
Okay.
So, but you know, that would almost be a more interesting game if they would have like robbed you of those powers or something like that. So yeah, that's interesting. It definitely, like on this playthrough of the game, I was trying to be more mindful of like, where did they, like, which of these cutscenes did they cut out of, like, because at one, I think at one time in the game, there was like supposed to be a samurai playthrough and a ninja playthrough, and they cut that. And so it's interesting to see, like, which cutscenes did they rip out of the samurai playthrough, and which cutscenes did they rip from the ninja playthrough, and then they combined everything together. Because it doesn't matter what you do, like, what your actions are in this game, you still end up becoming a ninja, and your uncle hates you. Like, I'm sure you could not backstab anybody this entire game out of, like, outside of when you have to, and the story would still progress with you, like, poisoning Mongols and your uncle... yeah, basically like disavowing you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was playing like that, if I was like trying to be a good guy, like a samurai about the whole thing and just fight people head on, and I still got those cutscenes at the end, I'd be fucking pissed. That would, because it is not, that would not be the easy path through this game, just having sword fights with everybody, because it's way easy to just throw grenades at Mongols and they blow up real good. So anyway, this is not the Ghost of Tsushima podcast. One thing I did want to mention before we start, I procured.
Ooh, nice.
I got the Screamy Red Man, guys.
Nice. I've seen it. I forget what the name is, but.
In the Court of the Crimson King.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sam, are you ready for that? At this stage in your training?
Yes, I'm ready to become a dark mad scientist.
Yeah, this probably turned mad scientist.
Yeah, so I thought you guys would like that.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, oh, it's such a sick piece of album art. Anyway, somebody was over today picking up a few vinyls that they lent to me, and I gave them back, and I was looking through my other stuff, and I have like way more progressive rock than I thought I did, but it's just a little bit embarrassing. But anyway. We're here to talk about the 1977 movie, yeah. Italian supernatural horror movie, Suspiria. And this movie was brought to us by Gideon. Gideon, how'd you know about this movie? What made you want to bring it to the podcast?
Yeah, so this movie is interesting. It's kind of a full circle moment for me. I haven't seen it for about 11 years. I watched it when I first moved out. And for a brief time I had a roommate that was kind of like a film buff, and I was very new. Like, I hadn't seen hardly any horror at all at this point. I hadn't seen much movies really other than like my favorites growing up. And I still like can think of and remember moments from, just like his commentary watching this the first time. I wanted to bring it obviously for spooky season, and, it's kind of lauded as this, I guess you could call it like a giallo masterpiece, or just a horror movie masterpiece from the 70s that is extremely colorful, and hadn't seen it, you know, in that over a decade. So wanted to revisit, see what I thought about it, and see what you guys thought about it since you hadn't seen it either.
Yeah. So the basic premise of this movie is that it's a girl who goes off to a ballet school in Germany. She shows up, and German people are incredibly rude to her and don't let her in the door and don't barely give her a taxi ride and don't want to make just small talk in the taxi, which makes me incredibly uncomfortable. So that was cool. And then she gets into the ballet school, the ballet boarding school, and just shit, crazy shit starts happening. People are getting murdered left and right, and crazy things are happening at night, and all this creepy shit's going on. So things kind of transpire from there. Neil, did you know anything about this movie before before Gideon brought it up?
No, not really. I had heard the name Dario Argento before.
Yeah.
And I had some conceptions, some misconceptions, but others that are accurate, about like the 60s and 70s Italian film industry. But as far as like story, production, I knew nothing about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had also never heard of this. I had heard of Dario Argento, and of course his daughter is Asia Argento. I knew about them, and I knew he was an Italian filmmaker and all that. But and I knew that like there was like a lot of Italian horror movies. Now didn't know anything about this movie, never heard of it. Which I feel like, you know, even among this is like a fairly popular movie. It's like it's pretty rare that like a popular movie I haven't like at least heard of, but no, I don't remember hearing about this ever.
Wow.
So yeah, this was kind of my first exposure to it as well. I don't think I knew any of the actors or actresses in this movie, except late in the movie, there's a guy who's like a psychiatrist who's talking to our main character. Not the old guy, but like the younger psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. That guy is going to be in Hideo Kojima's new game, OD.
When they're outside, like talking to him? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That guy is supposed to be an OD. He's in like one of the trailers, but he's like 70 or 80 now. But
wow, that's so random. What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's weird. He was the only person I knew, and I had to look it up. I was like, where the hell do I know this guy from? Because he looked so familiar. Where do we want to start with this movie? I think let's kind of give our high level thoughts. I'll kind of start off. I actually felt very similarly to this movie overall as I did to Addams Family last week, where visually it's like incredible. And I think something that will probably go unrecognized with this movie because the visuals are so strong. I think the soundtrack, quote unquote, is incredibly strong. Like the score is like really, really different and weird and cool. And there's like this chiming melody that plays through like a ton of the movie. I think aesthetically it's so awesome. And there's like a lot to love about it. And it's like short and it's snappy. I think the weakness is from like a character and a story perspective. There's just like not that much going on. And it leads to times where I'm like, I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, let's walk down the hallway a little faster. Like let's pick up the pace here a little bit. Which is weird for a short movie. Right. So I kind of like last week, I would give this one personally kind of like more of a mixed review. I think it's like worth a watch for the visuals and just like the horror vibes are really cool. But I think like the plot, like the central plot and the characters are weak enough that it's kind of like people are going to, I can't recommend it to everybody, right? Like people are going to like this differently based on kind of like your own predispositions to movies. Neil, what'd you think?
Yeah, I think I've got a similar conception of this as you do. Visually, I think this movie is gorgeous. I was watching on Amazon, and it had like the trivia stuff on the sides, and like I pretty early on kind of came to the conclusion that like the dialogue in this movie is not that important. Because everything was dubbed, like even the actors that speak English dubbed themselves later. So like generally like you're not going to get a like strong performance in the way that you would where like people are like actually acting in the moment.
You know, Neil, that strikes me now that you said that about them dubbing over themselves. I thought like there was something wrong with the stream I was watching. I was like, why is all the audio out of sync with their voices? Like movies are mixed in a way where you're like looking at the screen and at least kind of feels like the voice is coming out of the mouth. But like it felt like it was coming from like the center channel, like inside my head. I was hearing all the voices, like it was ADR. Okay, so it was on ADR. Okay.
Yes. So like, a lot of times, so the main actress whose name I'm forgetting right now,
Jessica Harper.
She speaks English. I think she's an American actress. I think she was in a bunch of like sitcoms apart from this. But so like in a lot of the scenes, like she'll be speaking English, like delivering her lines in English, and another actor from Italy who doesn't speak English will then deliver their lines in Italian. And like, you just, you can't act off of each other that way. Like, at least not to the full extent. So, and then, you know, both were dubbed, an English version was made and an Italian version. And I think even a German version. So yeah, like there's definitely a lot of like, Kung Pao moments where people's mouths are moving and then it doesn't quite sync up with what's happening. And even when, it's an English, actor or actress, dubbing themselves in English, like it's not going to be perfect.
Okay.
But, just going back to the visuals, one of the notes was that, Dario Argento had the set designer, try to copy the color scheme from the Walt Disney 1937 Snow White movie. Like, he wanted that kind of visual representation. I thought that was a very strange choice, but one that works. Like, but it would not have been like something that I would ever think to recommend or make that connection to.
No, I think the Snow White comparison is absolutely true. I haven't seen Snow White in a long, long time, but I think I could, off of memory, I would say that basically makes sense. Gideon, how about you? High level thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys about like the story, just kind of being light and not almost like the main point. It's definitely like a mood or vibe movie to me. Mm-hmm. One thing I did read a little bit of the trivia, and I remember my friend telling me about this when I first watched it. I think originally he wanted all the female actors to be like kids, basically like 12 years old. And I think they're about 20 in the movie, like the characters. And they're like, there's no way you could do that. But he did little things like, you know, he didn't change the script, so they almost like sound like children when they talk. And like the doorknobs are like at like the head level, like it would be for like a kid and stuff. And this to me also another reason wanted to bring it up. It felt kind of like a sister movie to House, which we watched on the podcast before, where it's like a strange, beautiful nightmare of like dollhouse murder. And they both came out the same year, 1977. Which is pretty crazy, honestly. So, yeah, I think those were some of the main things. I really liked revisiting it. I watched it. Alyssa had a Synapse Films Blu-ray that is, like, highly regarded, and it was just, like, a nice, crispy transfer.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome watching it on the OLED. Yeah, just totally beautiful. I heard also in the trivia on IMDb the soundtrack that we heard, played by the band Goblin, which is an awesome band name.
Mm-hmm.
They played that like full blast while the actors were like doing their scenes and stuff to just like make them unnerved and try and get that scared performance.
No, dude, you know what I love about 1970s bands is you could pick a single word and you could make it a band name and it wasn't taken yet.
Right.
Because like I've had that thing with bands before where like we come up with an awesome name and then we go on Spotify and then we look it up and there's 15 bands with that name already. I'm like, fuck. So much easier back in the 70s. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Neil.
One thing I was going to say is that I think that one of the conventions that happened is that part of me was comparing this to like the Sergio Leone Clint Eastwood movies.
Mm-hmm.
And one story I remember from that is Sergio Leone liked the music to his movie so much that like he would have it playing on the set while they filmed, because they also ADR'd all of the dialogue for those movies, and he would just like let the scene run so that the music would like come to like the end of like the 3-minute track. And I feel like they might have done something similar here, because there were a couple times where I was like, okay, cut. And but that to say, like, I feel like one aspect of this movie that really wasn't great was the editing.
Okay.
And there's a couple instances where this happens, but it really stood out to me in the basically the opening sequence where the two girls are killed in that apartment complex.
Mm-hmm.
And like, again, going into this blind, I wasn't sure exactly what to expect. And so the first, like the start of the first murder where that, where the girl has her face like pressed up against the glass window.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great. Like it, to me, it was like evocative of like drowning almost,
mm-hmm.
Without truly drowning. So like I thought it was like, mm-hmm. sort of like a reimagining of that. And then like it got much more basic because like the window breaks and then like it's a weird cut and then she just gets stabbed with a butcher knife and then it just kind of goes on. Mm-hmm. But while that's happening, it's cutting to her friend who's like running from door to door, like banging on the doors, like "Help! Help! There's a murderer!" And like I was like, if I sped this up to like 1 1/4 time and put on like the Wacky Sax music, like. Yeah. I think it would have fit, but then the murder scene happens,
mm-hmm.
Which involves a girl being thrown through the skylight, and then the glass is supposed to fall down and like kill her friend, and it was like a blink and you miss it cut of her like laying on the ground impaled by the glass.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there were several times throughout this movie where I was suddenly confused at the state of things because we cut from one thing to another, or we like crossed the action line and it wasn't quite clear how things were progressing. Thankfully, I think the movie is paced in a way where that's not like super important, right? You're able to like figure things out just because things aren't moving very quickly. But I would agree. I was also... When you were talking about the beginning of the movie, I thought for sure you were going to say like, yeah, we're in the car with our lead character, Susie, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the girl out in the woods and she's like running. And then she's like, all of a sudden the girl in the woods is out of the apartment complex. We hadn't spent a lot of time with these characters yet. And she like, isn't in her overcoat, like her trench coat anymore. So I was like, I was confused as to whether it was like Susie, because it's like from a distance, you can't even like really see who it is. It's, so I was like confused. Are we following Susie right now? Are we following the girl from the woods right now? Mm-hmm. Exactly. What is like, are we just abandoning Susie? Like what's going on? Like, and it's all made clear very quickly. If you watch for 20 more seconds, you're fine. You understand what's going on. But like, I think Neil's right. I think there are some like weird editing problems and like just weird technical problems from it being kind of an older movie and a non-Hollywood movie at this point in history.
I do wonder. I listened to a little bit of the special features, kind of different people talking about it. And they mentioned the term like nightmare logic. And it's like, I feel like some hardcore fans could argue like some of that kind of choppier or rough editing sequence is more like keeping in with that nightmare logic, or even like when that girl is like climbs out the window and falls into the razor wire. And it's like the whole room is just filled with like a ridiculous amount of razor wire. And just before it was like, you know, the creepy guy with the freaky eyes who can't open the door to save his life, even though he's trying to like murder her,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, I definitely get what you guys mean. And I feel like it's like your mileage may vary.
My thought during that section, when that guy was trying to get the door open, there was a very grabbable handle on the one side of the wooden door, like on the side that she was on, like, why didn't you just hold on to that thing and make sure it can't open the door?
Yeah. I don't know what she was doing. I like how when she stacked the boxes too, she put like the weakest one on the bottom and it like collapsed. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, get out of there.
Well, she's not going to school to be a structural engineer.
Yeah. Jeez.
But yeah, like the nightmare logic thing makes some sense to me. Where like again, I was really enjoying that. Minor psycho comes out here. I was really enjoying that first murder scene, and then like I thought the razor wire one was interesting until it's just a masked figure who has to finish things off with a butcher knife.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think the very best kill is the blind pianist around like the 2/3 mark, where it's like the camera is like a spirit flying around him, and it's just like torturing this blind man and his dog, and then finally just it possesses the dog. Like you're not I wasn't expecting the dog to be the one to kill him, because the dog's like trying to protect him at first. I thought that was very clever and great, and like, and it didn't involve a masked killer with a butcher knife.
The movies that this reminded me the most of, I'll see if you guys agree, The Wicker Man, in the sort of like fish out of water, dropped into this like, there's this occult thing going on that she doesn't really understand, and there seemed to be like a lot of people in on it except her. And the other one it really reminded me of was The Shining, which we have not done on the podcast. But at first, I was kind of convinced it was more of like, oh, this place is haunted. You know? Like, up until the last 10 minutes of the movie, I thought it was like, oh, the spirit of this weird building is what is causing all these problems. Not like, oh, there's like a level 20 sorceress actually in the attic of this place behind the secret wall that's like the head of the coven of witches and all that. I was actually kind of surprised that the directress ended up being like, I don't want to say alive, but a killable presence. I thought it was going to be more abstract than that, sort of like House or like The Shining or something.
I guess I didn't even fully realize watching it, just from like what Neil was saying with the dog getting like possessed and the piano getting killed, that you could like see it as like this, like, you know, either like witch magic or a spiritual entity or ghost or something like that. But yeah, I did think it was interesting. It's almost like especially with the end sequence, it feels like you're getting almost into the very center of this like really strange, like dark hole of just these witches that are manipulating the area and all the girls that go there. And it is kind of crazy how it all just explodes at the end, and the wind and everything whipping around, and that it even is like killable. It would feel like it wouldn't be. But that is interesting coming from it. It's like, it's not the house that's haunted. It's like the people in the house, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, I was just sort of surprised by the end that it ended up being like an actual tangible evil force and not just like this weird thing like The Shining. Anyway. So I don't want to go on too long about this movie if we don't have too much more to say about it, especially if, you know,
I have more thoughts, honestly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, I don't want to go on too long if it is, like, I don't want it to be, like, a 1917 situation where, because the movie is light on plot, we've run out of things to talk about. But, no, go ahead, Neil.
So, this is, again, like, structural, and part of it is tied to, like, sort of a lack of plot. But so like when I finished the movie, Amazon decided to immediately start playing the like 2017 remake.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I had like the trivia board up, and the very first thing was, this movie clocks in at like 2 hours and 45 minutes, which is like more than an hour longer than the original. And that kind of like knocked it together for me. Like I haven't seen the remake. But watching this, it's not a long movie. I think, what, 96 minutes?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of, when I realized that the remake's an hour longer, I was like, yeah, this movie either needed to be half an hour shorter and be like a short, or it needed an extra half hour to flesh things out. Not necessarily, like, I didn't need more of, like, the witch stuff to be explained. I don't need everything spelled out, Sam. But, like, there were things that, like, you could have cut that don't go anywhere. Like, there's, like, the love interest for Susie, like, that doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or her interactions with the dark-haired dancer, Olga, who's only in, like, the first 10 minutes.
Yep.
Another one of the trivia facts was, like, Olga says, or the actress that played Olga said that there was a scene later where it's revealed that she's, like, a witch in training, but that was cut from the final cut of the movie. And that would, like, add something to that, to the beginning, but I feel like there's a solid, like, 30 minutes you could just cut from this movie, because none of it goes anywhere. It's not that they're red herrings, it's that they just literally don't matter. Or you add back in 30 minutes of cut content to flesh out some of these characters, or, like, make them go somewhere.
Yeah, it definitely feels rough to me in that way. It feels a little, I don't want to say incomplete, but, like, things didn't go exactly as according to plan in production. What else? Anything else new?
That was a big one. But ultimately, like, maybe we'll get the rating soon, but I feel like this movie is definitely saved by the beginning. There are more kills in this, but, like, what I would call the big three, there's that opening kill or double kill. There's the pianist. And then that, honestly, that last 10 minutes saved this movie for me.
I was actually, I really enjoyed the first half of it. The first half I felt was, like, really strong, and I wanted to keep watching, and I was engaged, and I was, like, sucked into it. And then as things were, like, it was going on and there wasn't a lot happening, and we were just spending more time being confused, and it wasn't, like, progressing the plot, I started to lose interest a lot more. Like, toward the end where she's like, I can find out where they're going by how many footsteps they're taking. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, I know. I can hear you're acting that with your face. I understand what you're trying to tell me. There was, like, a lot of that kind of stuff in, like, the last third. You know, you wonder if, like, test audiences, like, didn't get it and they had to, like, add the narration, like, Blade Runner style. But I would agree. The last, like, 10, 15 minutes are pretty strong. And I like the first 50 minutes as well, but there's this big chunk in the second half that I'm just, like, getting bored, and I'm just, like, ready to get some answers and for like, the plot to pick up a little bit. That moment never really came, but until, like, the last 10 minutes, and then you really, you know, start seeing some shit. I wasn't in love with the whole, like, the secret of the whole movie is, like, the thing that she misunderstood from the person who was running out of the building. You know what I mean? I was like,
yeah,
I was like, whatever. That just, like, wasn't an interesting plot. It's not that it's a twist. It just, like, wasn't an interesting plot element to me. Oh, like, suddenly now that it's important to remember what that girl said, now I can suddenly remember what she said and I can twist the thing and go through the door. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever.
It's kind of yada yada her way to the,
right. Like, there could have been, like, a smarter, cooler way for her to figure that out, and it just seemed like, you know, kind of just a lame plot point. I don't know how to describe it other than just to call it lame, which I know sounds reductive, but I don't know. Do you guys feel like you're ready to give scores?
I do have a few things I wanted to mention. I just, like, some of my favorite scenes, some things with the music, and I do have a interesting anecdote about the remake, because I did go see that when that released. But I really love the, I feel like it almost doesn't get talked about enough, but the very beginning of the film when she's, like, leaving the airport and the doors open, and then it does, like, an extreme close-up of, like, the gears, and it's already, like, that just, like, visually is, like, bad luck, you know, like, is she gonna get her foot snagged in there, like, what's going on? And then she gets outside, and obviously it's like really beautiful with all the colors, the whole movie. And at points it even felt like Wes Anderson, like in that the first murder scene, like that interior was very Wes Anderson feeling to me. And all the rain and getting like struggling to get into the cab. It was like this movie just feels like a bad night, the vibe. Which is interesting because it's almost like this movie is like kind of haunted in a way, or like things related to it. Because so I saw the 2018 movie when it released, it was like February. It was super cold. I went with my friend and we went to Iowa City, and like the chairs we sat on were like rigid metal chairs that were like super uncomfortable. I didn't really realize the movie was 2.5 hours long. I was really excited because Tom York did the music for it, and I'm a big Radiohead fan. But I didn't watch any trailers. I just wanted to go in blind because I was like, "Oh, I liked the original. I'll probably like the remake." And it was like way, way more gory than I was like ready for. And I was like, "Oh shit!" I'm like locked in this. I was like uncomfortably sitting in this like sturdy ass metal chair, 2.5 hours in the freezing, frigid February cold, and just like trying to get through it when I was still like very new to horror. So it was just like a hard watch. And there's like a scene, like small spoiler, but there's a scene that's like 5 minutes of this girl just getting twisted like a pretzel, and it's like really just like bone crunchy, grisly. I was like, Jesus. Yeah. I was like, I'm not ready for this. And then I come home from Iowa City, and my car, like the water pump, like broke on me, and I barely made it through like this intersection, and my car like died on me, and I had to get help, and it was like a whole thing. I was like, this movie is fucking cursed. And it was a crazy finale to like even just struggling to get to the theater because it was at night and so cold and everything.
It was just the what was the name of that car you had, the cool car?
That was my 2004 Chevy Monte Carlo.
The Monte Carlo. Okay, I remember the Monte Carlo.
It was right? Bright yellow.
It was like monkey piss yellow. Yeah, monkey.
I think it was competition yellow is what the, they called it.
I just remember I remember that Monte Carlo and that apartment you lived in.
It was like a banana boat.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, cool. Well, that, you know, it sounds like that experience really made a man out of you. It's like when Neil and I went to see Evil Dead together in 2013.
Nice.
Which was totally sick. Well, I'm definitely glad that you brought this to the pod. It was definitely interesting watch. And I don't think I'd be opposed to watching it again, and like, because I watched it in like broad daylight today because I had to get it done for the podcast. But I'd love to watch it like at night in a theater with some popcorn, like really set the tone.
Yeah. It definitely seems like a really good just spooky movie that you could honestly kind of talk over with friends. The plot doesn't really matter. Even one thing the special features mentioned is it's almost kind of like a fable in like the way that they talked about Snow White, you know, but it's about witches and just how, you know, powerful they can be or whatever.
Yeah, don't do ballet. Also, speaking of which, so many attractive women in this movie. Holy shit. Like just.
Yeah, beautiful. Everybody.
Everybody's so hot.
Well, I loved how beautiful everyone was with dancing and everything. And then that mean lady is like, "Oh, this guy doesn't speak English and he's ugly. You can call him ugly." It's like, oh my God, you're such an asshole.
Yeah.
And sorry. I did.
Go ahead, kid. Sorry.
I just wanted to also talk again about the music. I mean, Goblin. Yeah. Awesome band name. The music, very unsettling, really cool sounding, really groovy, that like spooky, raspy voice and everything. I really don't feel like I've heard too much stuff sound quite like that.
You know, there was a particular guitar riff in the background of this of the music that kept going bow-da-da-bow-da-da-bow-da-da-bow-da-da-bow-da-da-bow-da-da, like that. And it reminded me exactly of the Footloose song. If you guys know what I'm talking about, it was a very similar kind of ring. I'll try to find a comparison between the two of them.
Yeah.
Because it's in the same key and everything. It's like the same two notes. So I'll try to find it and send that to you guys.
And last thing before we go to stars, I wanted to ask you guys what you thought about the gore. Because I was almost a little hesitant, especially during the first kill. I was like, Jesus, this is pretty gnarly, her getting like stabbed in the heart and very close up.
I felt like it wasn't all that big of a deal. I mean, it just as a 70s horror movie, it reads as being so much less realistic. And I also think like there's something to be said about the coloration of this movie. Like all the blood in this movie is like fucking bright red, capital B bright red blood. And I think it takes the edge off the gore, at least for me. The coloration of this movie makes it seem less intense somehow to me. That's just my take.
Yeah.
What about you? I wasn't bothered at all. I had a misconception that, or maybe this is like the exception to the rule, but I thought that Giallo movies were like gore fests. And honestly, I thought this was pretty tame overall. I think there were, like, I wasn't bothered by that kill that you just described. I think probably the worst is late in the movie, one of the characters is brought back as a sort of zombie. But even that was like, you know, like apart from like an initial cringe, like totally acceptable. One other, I just have two other things I want to say before stars. So both at the end of the movie. Number one is, in the climax, Susie takes on the head witch. And I thought the sequence was great. Like, it was a little campy, a little like bad 70s effects, but like I was like invested enough in the scene that I was willing to overlook like dated effects. And we talked about how like all the lines are ADR'd. So like I don't think that the person delivering the witch's lines was a native English speaker. Like, I'm just, like, I don't have anything to back that up. I just assume because like the cadence and timing is a little off, but like the voice itself, like, give that person an Emmy. Like, it was so good to me.
Wow.
But then just to cap it off, like, again, like this is kind of a problem of editing, but I liked this one just because it made me laugh. Is that at the very end, Susie has to escape the dance academy, and as she escapes, the building catches fire, and it just immediately starts to roll credits.
Yeah,
and like not slow movie credits, lingering on the shot. It was like TV, like, okay, we gotta wrap this up before
football comes on.
Yeah.
Did anybody catch in the credits that says it doesn't say Suspiria, it says you have been watching Suspiria? No, almost like awesome. You're watching Disney Channel.
That's awesome. I have one last fun bit of trivia about the like main head witch that Susie stabs. Apparently she was uncredited and she was like a 95-year-old retired former prostitute. And I don't know why they didn't credit her, if it was because of that or what, but I thought that was funny.
Surely if you're 95, the statute of limitations on prostitution is run out by then.
Also, it's Italy.
Yeah. It's like, who cares? Okay, boys. Stars?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'm going to go 3, just like I did for Adam's Family, because I feel almost exactly the same way. It's like, good, but I would say a mixed review, and I have a hard time giving more than a 3 to anything that where like there's not really that much of a plot going on. But on the other hand, excellent visuals, incredible soundtrack. I mean, like, I think that the most underlooked part of how good this movie is the soundtrack is just totally awesome. I feel very comfortable with just like a very middling, just kind of you could take it or leave it kind of review. What about you, Neil?
Yeah. I was going to give this a 2, and then that last 10 minutes or so save the movie for me. It's a 3. I'd watch it again. I'm not in a hurry to, but I'd watch it again, maybe like in a more, like you said, Sam, like atmospheric setting, like,
yeah,
really get the popcorn and 40s ready.
I was gonna say I would also do this in a film in 40s kind of setting though, like watch with the buds.
Yeah, but I think it's also like definitely worth watching just from like again, I think like the set design and lighting and is all like very good in this. Like just watching it, just to like see how they pulled off some effects. Like one was that when the maggots are raining down on the girls as they're sleeping, they got that effect done by dumping grains of rice on them, and like the angle is right that it works out. So like I think there's a lot of like great film craft in this.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's just like tied around like a script that doesn't have enough story to carry the rest of what's going on.
Yeah, there's not a lot of meat on the bone. I thought for sure you were going to say that they obtained the effect of dumping maggots on the ballerinas by dumping maggots on the ballerinas. That would have made me laugh.
I mean, that would have been better, but like you know from like a you know, safety and health and just like getting, you know, multiple takes and like getting people to agree to it, I think like that's a really clever way.
So what you're telling me is that Nick Cage can eat a cockroach multiple takes in The Vampire's Kiss, and these girls can't get some maggots dumped on them?
I mean, most of these girls probably got paid like 5 lira.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage, man, he's for the craft, you know. He's for the books. He's for the history books about it.
When we look back at the 20th century, he will be one of the great actors. For sure. Listen, you all watched Leaving Las Vegas. Come on.
Quick sidebar. Are we going to do another Nick Cage November?
I would love to do another Nick Cage November, but...
I'm also down, but...
I also am sensitive to like wanting to extend spooky season and do more horror movies. So Gideon, what's your rating? Then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. This is definitely like a shining 7 out of 10, or between like a 3 and 4 for me. Cause yeah, the plot and characters are fairly weak. I do think if anybody is any kind of fan of horror, it's totally worth watching just for the experience. And I personally think I will be revisiting this one plenty of times over the years. But yeah, it's more almost like for hanging out, for having a nice rainy night movie, that kind of thing. I will give it a 4. I haven't seen any other like giallo movies, but this definitely makes me want to explore that side of film history and that genre of films. And yeah, I just think it's a spooky, weird, unsettling, beautifully dark movie. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a light 4 on this one.
Yeah, it sounds like we're pretty much all kind of in a similar vein here. Okay, well, whose turn is it to pick next week?
Should be Neil.
That's you, I think.
Yeah, because Neil picked Adam's Family, so it'd be me.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Let me check if Princeton wants to come on the podcast and do a spooky one, just so he can. I just want to check with him and make sure that's not something he wants to do. Or if I can't get a guest, maybe I might be able to get Amari or something like that. And if I can't, man, there's one I want to do, but I'm not even sure I want to watch it because it's going to be so horrible. Anyway, we'll figure it out and I'll post in the Discord about it, and it'll be a surprise for next week.
Okay, cool.
Now, right. If it makes you feel better, Sam, when we're through spookies, like through the holiday season, I'm considering bringing a film that, like, I want to go into it, and like, Sam, I'm gonna like usurp your host position because I don't like this movie, and I want to see how you guys react to it.
Okay, all right, interesting. Well, I look forward to it at some point. All right, guys, I will see both of you later on the Flippity Floppity. Gideon and Neil, Xander and I are going to be playing some Space Marine here in the Discord in a little bit. So if anybody's down for just hanging out on disc, I'll be back in like 10 minutes.
Cool.
All good.
All right. Catch you later. Peace out, guys.
Later, guys.